Once more under the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Well, once more, the personal wealth coach has returned in an overly gory fashion while quoting Shakespeare. This is the personal wealth coach, and today we're going to talk about sports. No.
Really?
No, definitely not talking about sports. That would be knocking us off into the deep end without knowing how to swim. Wait, that's a sport too, I think. Yes.
Take people who don't know how to swim and throw them in the deep end, and that's a sport?
You should get a medal for that.
I think so.
Just wait to give the medal to them after they get out of the water.
If they get out of the water. Yeah.
So this is the personal wealth coach, and we've just displayed the depth of our ignorance in the world of sports and not even knowing if a sport existed. But it sounds kind of fun, especially if they wear capes.
But I like Ted Lasso.
Where did that come from? What is Ted Lasso? Who is Ted Lasso?
Ted Lasso is a very popular TV series.
Oh, I don't know what that is either.
Oh, well, it's about a football coach, Midland high, college football coach who was recruited to...
European or American football?
American football in the Midwest.
Okay.
Who has a deep Midwestern accent. And he gets recruited into England to coach a Premier League football team, soccer type. And he doesn't even know the rules of soccer.
Well, I mean, it's on his resume. He's been a football coach for years. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. That's cool. That's about where we sit.
But it's a very interesting story.
Take that story and remove the fact that he knew something about a different sport, you have us.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. So this is the personal wealth coach where we don't claim to know much about sports, but we do claim to have at least a small amount of knowledge about the economy, the market, employment, silly stuff like that. You know, nowhere near as important as sports. But
we're not goldfish.
Yes, we're not. What? We're not goldfish?
We're not goldfish. Ted Lasso talks about goldfish being the happiest creature on earth because its memory is only 2 seconds long.
Oh, that's a myth. I studied neuroscience enough to know that's a myth. No, they can remember longer than that.
All right.
But they might be happy. That might not be a myth. I don't know. I've never looked at the surveys measuring happiness amongst goldfish.
All right. But we're not goldfish.
But it sounds like a great mascot for the team, though. Mm-hmm. And now, the goldfish. Anyway, we are way off subject. Normally, we're talking about disclosures. That was a big disclosure. To begin with, our biggest disclosure is we know nothing about sports.
Yes.
Okay. Or at least organized sports. Go ahead.
This is the personal wealth coach, which is also the name of a investment advisory firm and a fiduciary investment advisor firm that manages money and portfolios and does wealth management such as that. Based in Salado, Texas, and it's registered. Not that it's approved by, but it is registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which simply means we have more than $100 million under management. It doesn't mean anything else. And we named the show the same thing, and the same two principles are on here, but this is not investment advice.
The show? Is that what you said?
We named the show.
Right.
The radio show.
Yeah.
It's really not a radio show. It's a radio tell, but that doesn't make it. People don't use that term.
So we don't use terms appropriately all the time, so that's okay.
So, we're not giving investment advice on this radio show, whatever it is we're doing. We are giving educational information, and the educational information we present has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information. Beep.
Wow, you are going through all of them. So, we're giving...
you could get the rest of them.
We're giving education rather than investment advice on the air. The reason is because investment advice is tailored. See, I just used one word to do the whole thing.
You got it.
There it is. And you don't want to sit for a fitting in your undies in the middle of a public broadcast. I guess radio would be fine. Howard Stern's made a career of it, so it should be fine.
Yeah.
But we're not Howard Stern either. So that's a different disclosure. We don't pay for this program. We are not also paid for the program. It is something we have been doing for free. You've been doing it since 1997. I've been doing it since 1998 because that's the year I went to 2 hours and you said I'm not doing 2 hours alone.
Right. So I was scared.
You dragged your bald son into it with you. I don't even think I was bald at that point. I think that's right about the point that I made the decision.
That's
you scared the hair off of me. That's what happened.
It's probably what caused you to go bald, me too.
Yeah.
I had hair back then too.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's it right there. So causation, correlation, not sure, but it could be. So those are our disclosures. And now we're going to jump into what happened in the market this week.
Well, it was an interesting week. The week started off with the market taking a plunge that took it the S&P 500, at least, and the Dow pretty closely. Down about 5% from its highs at the beginning of September, and it looked like
it was a big
correction
drop.
Time.
Yeah, it was a big drop. Half a correction at the very least in one day.
Yeah, and it got right on down there. And it did that because a company you probably never heard of, but is one of the largest real estate developing companies in the world called Evergrande. Which
how could you not have heard of a company that is that good? It is Evergrande. Well, maybe they missed a letter at the beginning. It was an N. They should have had that at the beginning of the word.
You know, the
Nevergrande
that went sideways in the Panama Canal was also ever something.
Yeah, yeah. The N's keep falling off. You just need to have the N at the beginning, and then it's Nevergrande and Nevergreen, and it's fine.
It's kind of like investing with a guy whose name is Madoff.
Yes. What did he do? He made off.
Yeah, he made off with their money. I think the ever in front of a name of an investment company. By the way, they sold not only they only.
Well, you got to be careful because there's some good companies out there that start with Evernote's a pretty good company.
Okay, but they started anyway. Evergrande is not only a big real estate company; they also sell, and I quote, wealth management products.
Yeah, by real estate property, what we were talking about here is Evergrande is a very major real estate developer in China, mainland communist China, if you can still call it mainland Zist China. It's not Maoist.
Well, he's moving back towards Mao's positions. He wore a Mao.
That's
suit
just because recently. Maoism is already a word and Zhiism isn't. We're going to have to make it Zhiism.
Okay. Anyway,
he's a Zhiist.
Evergrande is a jihadist. Really big company. As a matter of fact, as far as its total valuation and impact is concerned, it was bigger than Lehman Brothers. And Lehman Brothers failed 13 years ago and defaulted on its loans and
caused a cascading domino effect to spread out into what has been called the Great Recession. There was a financial collapse. It is also amongst the financial world. It's not called the Great Recession.
What's it called?
GFC, Global Financial Crisis.
Oh, GFC.
Yeah,
sounds like something that you'd
it's like a chicken store or something. No, that's KFC.
Right.
Totally different. KFC is not a financial collapse. That's
or a circuit
fried
breaker
chicken
that's designed to keep you from getting electrocuted. This is your GFC circuit breaker.
No, that's a ground fault interrupt. That's a different thing, too. So,
GFI.
Acronyms are amazing. You just get confused after. Yeah. So the global financial crisis started out with a combination of AIG and Lehman Brothers doing a tango of bad debt. You want to continue?
No, I can go on when you're ready.
Did you hear what I did with Tango? And you could,
I like that.
You could bring in Contango. You could actually use this opportunity to introduce a word to people that they don't know. It's better than Deem. It's used less often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So
Evergrande missed an interest payment. Now, they haven't officially missed an interest payment for 30 days. But they didn't pay their dollar-denominated, and there are dollar-denominated bonds they have issued. And some of them are held by people in the United States and organizations in the United States. They were promising 8.5% maturing in 2022. And people said, oh, great, 8.5% in there. And the company that audits, the auditor for Evergrande, gave them a clean bill of health in their last audit. Of course, you remember that China has banned U.S. auditors from auditing companies in China. So it's a Chinese company that audited it. And anyway, Evergrande
still not good.
It looked like it might. It's at $300 billion in debt. That's a lot of debt. That's more than Lehman Brothers defaulted on. So that kind of confused people and made them worry at the beginning of the week. And then there was also this ongoing fear that the Federal Reserve, which was meeting this week, would move too soon and too fast, and they tighten the money supply and kick us back into recession. And then there's Congress. The Senate, the Republicans in the Senate have said, we will not support the raising of the debt ceiling, period, paragraph, no way. There's no way we'll do it. And it's going to take 60 votes, so it's not going to happen. And CEOs and the Secretary of the Treasury and other people are saying that would be really, really bad if the United States, as of about October 20th, stops paying its debts.
Yeah, I would.
And
that would
and
be
the Senate
bad.
Majority leader, minority leader said, that's too bad. We don't like the way we're being treated, so we're not going to help the Democrats raise the
debt ceiling.
Raise the ceiling, debt ceiling.
Yeah.
Which sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah, I think we've been here before.
2011? 2011 we did that? Yeah.
Yeah, wait. Anyway. How many government shutdowns have we had? I mean, some of them are over passing budgets, and some of them are over not increasing our debt limit.
Well, the last time we went through this, I think it was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It was a partial shutdown, and people didn't get their paychecks. And
people got upset, and then Congress said, all right,
Congress,
all right, we'll do our job.
And then the U.S. got its credit rating chopped, and interest rates went up on the tail end of the curve because of that.
Moody's and S&P both chopped the credit rating for the United States government.
Because they didn't pay their debts on time. Anyway, so there's some that's a source of worry. Then there's the Delta variant of the COVID Delta variant, which is rolling around, which is doing a lot of damage globally. We can talk about that some more. So all this stuff was worrying a lot of people, and the market went down.
That was what happened on Monday. Well, what happened Tuesday?
Well, when the Fed came out with its announcement after its meeting, the press conference, they said, you know, we're seeing some real great strength in the economy everywhere we look. And yeah, we're probably going to stop buying so many bonds probably in November. We're going to gradually taper that off, but don't tie that to interest rate increases because we're not in any hurry to raise interest rates, which historically the taper tantrum would have hit at that point. Oh, they're going to taper. They're going to stop buying bonds. They're going to raise interest rates. But instead the market started back up again.
And the reason why it started back up again is because it had already been clobbered by a bunch of bad news for the week. And it's like, oh, the bad news. And then the Federal Reserve came out, and which would have been in a good news week, said something that some interpret as bad news, even though it talks about the strength of the economy. It does include less free money for everybody in the future. The market said, oh, the Federal Reserve thinks we're doing fine. It's all right.
Well, then the traders and people who were selling and buying on Wall Street came to an interesting conclusion. Evergrande's collapse is not a surprise. As a matter of fact, we've been talking about it in the newsletter, the Chinese financial crisis for months.
Five years. I went back to look at the first time we talked about the excess Chinese real estate debt. It wasn't 5 years ago. We had an episode on it 5 years ago. It was 10 years ago, coming out of the Great Recession, what they were doing when they were building the empty cities. And we said they're taking on huge amounts of debt, which is coming from state banks, but they're going directly to private developers. And those developers are now on the hook for all this debt. And at some point, they're going to have to make a profit to pay the debt back.
And so
Evergrande didn't.
So what happened in China, for whatever it's worth, we can talk about that some more, is the Chinese government, we talked about this last week, and there were four red lines that you couldn't cross, and apparently Evergrande crossed all four of them, so the Chairman Xi established this too much debt is bad doctrine, and they cut Evergrande off from future financing, which Evergrande is probably going to collapse.
Well, it's already this is what we would call conservatorship in the United States. In that the regional authorities, the regional government has stepped in and taken control.
So
what we would call bankruptcy is already applying here. Expect the banks in China to not have too much issue with this because they're government banks, and Xi's already splitting the assets up, kind of like what happened with General Motors, where pieces were split off and purchased by other banks, kind of like what happened with Lehman Brothers, only the way the debt is owed is different. Basically, it's all owed to the United States, or at least in dollar-denominated bonds. What? Yeah. Evergrande's debt is mostly dollar-denominated.
It's owed to the United States?
Well, it's a lot of United States foreign investors are owed by Evergrande. So that debt payment that was missed this week, they still have 30 days to make it before late fees and so on get on there. It's kind of like a mortgage. The first time you're late, it doesn't mean you get kicked out of the house. The fact that the regional folks are already involved means that they don't think they'll be able to make the next one either, or the one after that. So
the government, the Chinese government, has warned the regional government that be prepared to step in and seize the properties because it's going to go down.
Yeah.
And once Chairman Xi decides the company is going to go down, it's going to go down.
Yeah. Because even if it doesn't go down, it's going to go down.
But the key here is there's been plenty of warning on this, and we got burned on it 13 years ago. And while memories on Wall Street are short, they're not that short.
Yeah. Burning with cash, memories tend to be longer.
Yes. And as a result, there's probably very little or no linkage to the rest of the world, because everybody who had any sense, which doesn't include everybody, has
in fact, maybe even not the majority of everybody, but
made sure that they weren't borrowing money from Evergrande
or loaning money to Evergrande.
Loaning money to Evergrande. But people did still probably, we're still going to have some pain, because there's some people who don't understand that in the interest rate environment we're in today, if somebody promises you 8.5% on a short-term loan, that means that there's a pretty fair chance they're not going to pay it back. So it's not going to be a big deal.
Right. Quick reference back. Do you know when we started this out, we're comparing it to the global financial crisis, the global financial collapse. I need to have like scary music when I say that. And we said it's not like that. Well, what's the difference? Why is it not like that? I've gotten that question multiple times because lots of articles are saying it's not the same. The reason why it's not like that is because at that point, Lehman Brothers, AIG, were both involved in a kind of debt relationship that was extremely incestuous with the other banks and insurance companies. It was kind of gross. They were buying each other's debt and then selling it back to each other in like these weird feedback loops. And I can get into the math of it. I actually broke these things down as part of my research during that time period. And that's not happening here. What we have is dollar-denominated debt. Let me kind of rewind a second. When I say dollar-denominated debt, a great deal of the debt that the corporate structures in China owe are dollar denominated. It's from emerging market bond positions that have looked around China and they've made, and I've heard this at conferences. I bet you remember the conference I'm thinking about. It was 2018. And there was a emerging market bonds guy on a panel. He was a mutual fund manager. And there was a question about government influence and how long would China allow the debt for these corporations to remain as high as it was. And his answer was, well, we don't think China's ever going to let these companies fail. Do you remember this?
Yep.
This was only 3 years ago. And because up to that point, China had not let those companies fail. And we had said at that point, well, then they're just Japan or they're just Greece. Japan didn't let the companies fail and stopped growing. China is either going to let these companies fail or stop growing, or some combination of the two. And that's where we are right now, is that without this, they are actually taking in this thing, a new approach in modern finance. This is one of those oddities, and we've got questions waiting in the background from from folks, and we haven't forgotten about you. We're going to be getting to you in a minute.
We haven't done the markets yet either.
We haven't finished the markets. This is a big deal. There's a couple of other big deals that took place in China this week, like cryptocurrency transactions, period, buying, selling them at all, buying anything with them, selling anything for them, is now illegal in China. That's where the majority of the market for these were. It's where the majority of them were created, and the majority of them are owned. So that's a big deal and likely to become bigger over the coming weeks. And let's finish up the market. Said we're being way too, well, no, we can't be too long-winded. We have a radio program.
This left only two things for the market to worry about and for the investors to worry about. That's the COVID Delta variant, which is worth being concerned about, and the extension of the debt ceiling. And investors theoretically had those calculated in, or else they don't care. So investors flooded in to buy on the dip. And they did. And by the end of the week, the SPX, the Standard Poor's 500 stock index, stood at 44.55.48. So you can remember 44.55, up roughly 0.5% for the week. It's 1.76% below its recent record, but it's still up 18.62% year to date, which is really good. And we follow another equity index, the CRSP Mid Cap Value Index. It was at 24.55.62. It's up 64. Basis points, or 0.64% for the week, and about almost 20% for the year. The yield on the U.S. Treasury note rose 6% to 1.454, which doesn't sound like much until, again, you remember at the beginning of the year, the yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note was 0.91. That's a big jump. So the bond market continued to steepen, indicating better times ahead. West Texas Intermediate crude oil rose 3% to 73.96, which is just sort of noise. But it was on increasing demand, which is kind of interesting because there was worry last week and into this week that maybe there was too much oil and people were going to not drive as many trucks, or we weren't going to use as much gasoline or something. And as a result, the price of oil might collapse, but it didn't happen. It's important to remember, we're in a bull market. We're in a really healthy bull market, and you can tell a really healthy bull market because it has events like this where it gets really, really worried. Now, an unhealthy bull market, which is the end of bull market, where we go from optimism, which we didn't have this week,
to euphoria, which we really did not have this week,
is when all the worries go away and they say it's different this time and stocks will go up forever and everybody should own a lot of stocks. And right now that's going on. Unfortunately, for people who are in it, over in the bond market, people are still buying bonds despite the fact that interest rates are rising and bonds are falling, as if they think interest rates are going to fall again, which I think is always possible, but extremely unlikely. So that's kind of a wrap on the market. We're doing very well in the market this year, exceptionally well. And across the board, if you've been invested in equities, you've got an investment portfolio, you should take a look at it, and you should have some pretty good returns this year, no matter where you invest it. If you don't have good returns this year, if you've lost money this year, and I know that it's happened, you probably ought to take a look at what you're invested in.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a year where it was really hard to lose money.
If you lost money, then it's always easy to lose money, but even in years where it's hard to lose money, it's still easy to lose money if you don't know why you are where you are. And so that's really what we emphasize to people. Know why you own the things that you own. What are they for? Why do they fit into your portfolio? And if you don't know, you should be able to call someone and they should be able to tell you something better than, well, I think it's a good company. How does it fit what you're trying to accomplish? And I know that's a strange thing to be thinking about with finance. I know. What are you trying to accomplish? But we've got a couple of questions out there from Inquisitor John. Thank you, Inquisitor John. Do you want to do the Cold War question? I think you're more suited to that one.
You mean like Molucca? Is the Molucca Straits like the, what did he say?
Fold the gap.
Hold the gap. No, it's not. I was in the Fulda Gap, and the Fulda Gap.
Wait, let's give some context to everybody else. Well, let's not just answer obtusely.
No, I can know what I'm doing here. The Fulda Gap was dry and really pleasant, and they had good schnitzel.
Schnitzel was amazing.
And it was in Germany, and it's where if Russia was going to invade into West Germany and into the rest of Europe, the Fulda Gap was kind of the icon for this is the way they're going to come. And it actually wasn't the main way they were going to come, but everybody thought it. Popular press said this, they'll come through the Fulda Gap. And so we spent a lot of effort in the United States Army, spent a lot of effort making sure they couldn't make it through the Fulda Gap. Matter of fact, we kind of hoped they would come through the Fulda Gap because it would narrow the forces down and we could really snocker them real well. No, what he is asking about is the fact that the Chinese are very concerned about something they call the Malacca Dilemma.
It's the Malacca Strait. It's where Sumatra and Malay Peninsula come together. It's a narrow opening of water.
And it historically has been full of pirates, except for the fact that it's not. And the reason it's not is because the United States Navy maintains fairly constant patrol in that area. And the pirates have discovered that the United States Navy has bigger guns than they do.
Yeah. And it's
and
really,
so they don't
really
harass the ships anymore.
For some reason, it's hard to take the U.S. Navy ships from them. So they just stopped being pirates.
But it is a choke point. And one of the things that's important to understand, man, everything's about China today.
Yeah.
It's important to understand something about China. They have a distinct shortage of raw materials. They get most of their raw materials from what we used to call the Middle East is now officially Southwest Asia.
And Africa.
And most of it comes by ship, which is their Belt and Road initiative, is to make ports in Africa and other places where they can load their ships and bring lots of raw materials to China so China can make lots of stuff and sell it and make lots of money.
What they're doing with the Belt and Road is providing low interest rate loans to places outside of China. But if you recall what we were talking about earlier in the hour with loans in China, just keep that in mind as we go forward. Go ahead.
The belt part of Belt and Road is actually seaports, mm-hmm. which has where they get belt from that. I'm not completely sure, but
it's
they
translation issue, I'm sure.
Anyway, and the result is that they bring China's economy is very, very, very dependent upon shipping, commercial shipping through the Malacca Straits, and the United States pretty much controls the Malacca Straits.
What something and amazing that has not been happening for some reason is that the United States Navy is not sinking Chinese vessels. It's not taking their stuff as they pass through, but it is uncomfortable for the Chinese government.
Right. They're in a position where if somebody closed off the Malacca Straits, they'd be in a world of hurt. Nobody's going to invade through the Malacca Straits, so it's not like the Fulda Gap. But it is a weak spot, and the Chinese have been extending their naval strength and their territorial boundaries in that direction. And frankly, if it were up, I think if the Chinese general staff and the strategic thinkers in China had their way, they would simply capture the land on both sides of the Malacca Straits, hold it, and say, that's ours. Now, by the way, there's a good historical precedent for this. Britain, Gibraltar.
It's not the only time it's been done. Also happened in Panama. It just happened with a contract rather than invasion.
But the issue is when you have some narrow shipping.
But let me time out for just a second. Contract rather than invasion. But do you think if, say, Mexico or China came to the United States and said, hey, we're going to dig a canal through the middle part of Florida, and you're going to give it to us for 100 years. Do you think we'd sign that? If they had a big enough army and we had a small enough army, yes. And that's what happened in Panama.
It all depends if Florida was a separate country and was broke.
Yeah, exactly. And had a very tiny army and we had a very big. Yeah, that's the point I'm making. It was an invasion, same.
And the Mexicans said, we're going to give you a whole lot of money for that 100-year period.
Right.
Particularly your politicians.
Yeah. So this was like a great incentive to do it. Gibraltar was like a great disincentive not to do it. Like, we will kill you if you stay here. This is ours now. So China has precedent for this amongst nations that we would consider, you know, they're ethical, the new, they're very polite. They're not necessarily. So,
but it's unlikely they're going to be able to do that. And it's going to leave them uncomfortable. And it's a balancing act, because as long as they think we might cut off the Malacca Straits, they're going to get more and more nervous about the fact that we could, and they couldn't do anything about it. And that's what the article that John sent was about. Yeah. It's interesting. The Secretary of Commerce said something this week that relates to that. Yes. She announced that she was working on expanding trade with China, which everybody, I mean, in your immediate reaction, we got all kinds of tariffs and lots of things going on that says we don't want to trade with China. Well, in fact,
her name, by the way, the Secretary of Commerce is Gina Raimondo, which is normally the Secretary of State is an extremely political appointment where people are putting someone in that position that is absolutely going to support the president in everything. And the Secretary of Commerce isn't quite as academic minded as like a Federal Reserve appointee, but much more versed on trade. And she is as well, as was Trump. So when we're saying this, the Commerce Secretary has been a pretty good appointment for a long time of a bureaucrat politician, so that they actually have some experience and background and know-how. So,
And it's important that we maintain constructive ties with China. The reality is China is big. It's got a big economy. It's got a big manufacturing capacity that we need. And although we have differences and we hopefully can work out some of those differences, that doesn't mean we should try to isolate them. We tried that with Japan and it didn't work out so well.
And what has worked out really well with China to prevent it from doing lots of invasions is the opposite of isolation, of actually opening up our trade with them, because they don't want to invade their customers because they would lose their money. So that's that. The more we can support the concept of the Belt and Road as a commercial enterprise, the safer the world is from China. The more you isolate them, the more they're just angry at everybody else. And you can't really isolate them because they need outside stuff in order to sell us the stuff that we insist on buying from them. So it's not possible to isolate them. So how we approach that is carefully. Well, do you think we hit that one fairly well?
I think one last comment. I've had people say we should just cut off all trade with China. All I got to say is, what you're saying is close Walmart.
Close Walmart, close Amazon.
Close Walmart, close Amazon.
Close Ace Hardware. Close almost all shops.
Close Apple, close Samsung. Microsoft. If we're willing to live at a low enough standard of living, we could shut down trade with China.
It has to take place over a long period of time. There's not an on-off switch.
Well, I don't think we need an off switch.
We need a dimmer. We need to turn it down. And we're doing that.
We need it to be in a position where, just like the Chinese are concerned that we effectively control the Malacca Straits,
we're concerned that they effectively control rare earth metals and magnets and electronics and plastic.
That's going to go on. And we need to be thinking seriously about the fact that if there's some critical element that we have and we need, it's a vital element to our nation, we should have a backup on it. This is where free enterprise is wonderful, but this is one of the roles of government is to step in and say, nope, we don't need to go to the cheapest place to make this, to make the highest profit, which is free enterprise and free markets. We need to find some way to make sure we have a reserve here so that we won't be stuck in a position where if the cheapest supplier is the only supplier and they cut off our stuff, we're in trouble.
All right, so we've got to play some commercials, and then we're going to completely change the subject to the next question, which is about China, not changing the subject. So we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to have some great commercials. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have email addresses at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango, Papa, Whiskey Charlie, or the Personal Wealth Coach. And we'll be back on the other side of these extremely important announcements. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff.
We're both McClure's. We're both bald. That's our last disclosure for the day.
Really?
Well, until the next one.
Okay.
All right. So again, Inquisitor John's question. He's, and just like the last question, there's is the Wall Street Journal. There's a picture of the paper form. We take the digital form. He has digitized his paper for us. We appreciate that. This is a strong conversion that's going on here from physical to virtual every week. It's pretty important. Okay. So his question is a bit more obscure than usual. Both questions this week have been about things most people aren't familiar with. So we're going to try to bring some familiarity here. This question is about the MSCI ACWI.
Yes.
That may be obscure.
That's on the tip of everyone's tongue.
Yes. MSCI is an index creation group, and they generally look around the planet rather than at one specific place, though they have indexes that are one specific places or X specific places, like there's indexes that exclude certain things. The MSCI ACWI is it's 50 countries. Some of them are emerging markets and some of them are industrialized. The Wall Street Journal has a story, and the story is called Investing in China Can Be Thorny, which is basically what we've been talking about all hour, so this makes sense that we should continue to talk about it. He's got a section circled here, and part of it is the journalist is, what would you say about that? When the journalist is making an assumption that may be a little bit unbacked. All right, so here's what's going on. Today, China constitutes about 4% of the total value within the MSCI ACWI index. Okay, so this is the Wall Street Journal reporting this. It's got 50 developed and emerging markets around the world. In theory, an investor should have that much China, but no more in a global stock portfolio. His question, John's question, is how does the U.S. rate in terms of how much of the index it represents if China is 4%? So before we even get to that, there is nothing anywhere anyone has ever written that, well, now it's been written in the Wall Street Journal, that says you should only own companies in proportion to the MSCI ACWI index. So this thing about that, if you have a global stock portfolio, you shouldn't have more than 4% in it. I don't necessarily disagree and say you should have more or less in there. It shouldn't be based on the index, though. You should have something based on who you are and what you're trying to accomplish and recognizing how much of your portfolio should be in China. Okay, so how much of that index is represented by the United States? And this will help tell you why I say setting up your investments according to the ratio set up by this index doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless you're just trying to duplicate it. And that is, the United States makes up about 60% of that index, 59.4%. If China is 4% of that index, roughly, and the United States is 60% roughly, so just below 60%, just above 4%, rounding. Is the United States 60% of the economy of the world? Quick answer, no. It's big, but not that big. Is China 4% of the economy of the world? Quick answer, no. China is smaller than the United States, but not that much smaller. 4% doesn't make sense. 60% doesn't make sense. The United States is really big. It's a big player. But what's the second biggest economy? Also a really big, big player. So this ratio, the reason why you would have the ratio up there, has nothing to do with what the journalist is writing here. The way they have that index set up has to do with being a slightly more conservative mix of already emerged nations versus emerging nations. It's a complicated setup. The Wall Street Journal is approaching it like everybody should have this really complicated reasoning when developing their own portfolio, which isn't necessarily true. So the MSCI ACWI index is trying to represent kind of a conservative look. And if you kind of look at where the mix is, it's kind of looking at what was happening 20 years ago rather than today, or even 40 years ago rather than today. It's not a bad index for what it's for, but you shouldn't design your portfolio in a global stock index that doesn't have anything to do with you. You need to figure out why that index was made before you make that decision. And that's it's an obscure area. Something that's really important to understand here, when you're setting up a global stock portfolio, it shouldn't be, I'm going to mimic an index. And I kind of said that multiple ways. Why not? Well, some exposure outside the United States is important in a portfolio to have some influence on what's happening elsewhere, because our economy is influencing all the other economies and vice versa. So having some exposure outside that to, you know, at some points the foreign markets are up when we're down, and at some points we're up when the foreign markets are down. So it's a good way of putting like a shock absorber into your car to kind of even it out. It doesn't happen all the time. Some bumps are felt everywhere. So when you're setting up your global stock portfolio, the rule of thumb shouldn't be, I'm going to very carefully set this up in correspondence with the index that I don't understand. I know that's not the question John was asking. John was asking, where do we stand in this picture? And that's part of where I'm coming back. It sounds like when John sends us stuff, I'm criticizing the Wall Street Journal's journalists, which is sad because it is my favorite publication. We love lots of publications, but they're not economists. They are finance-oriented journalists, and we just have to point it out occasionally.
It's kind of like the MSCI EAFE is kind of the standard that's right. That's basically the developed countries, is kind of the standard for global funds. And most global mutual funds that include the United States and the developed countries have holdings that come pretty close to mimicking the allocation of the MSCI EAFE. Well, the AWI fund, or index, is kind of the standard if you want to throw in developed and
emerging,
or developing markets. And basically, if you look at the emerging market, diversified emerging market funds, most of them have an allocation to China, and it's pretty similar from one to another. And it makes a pretty good argument.
I think you're about to say something that will be quotable for the future. You said before we got started with the program about being wrong altogether.
Oh, yeah. Well, the bottom line to it is emerging market funds typically have a pretty good size chunk, around 30% of their money in China. And most of them have 30% of their money in China. Some of them don't have any in China. But why do they have 30% of their money in China? Well, because if China goes south and all of them are wrong together.
Wait a minute.
It's not, the managers don't lose their job. But if one of them does something different and China does something weird, either positive or negative, and they didn't participate, they could make the manager lose his job. So you have to really understand what's in the fund and what their allocations are. And if they've gotten some really high returns, it's really a good, an important thing to look at that. And I got a whole subject matter on that one too that I'd like to talk about at some point.
So those are the
returns and so on.
Those are the two questions, and they were good questions.
John always asks good questions.
And I mentioned this at the beginning of the hour. If you don't mind talking China for just a little bit longer with the cryptocurrency thing.
I really don't know much Mandarin.
Well, you can do Cantonese if you prefer.
I don't know Cantonese either.
Oh, man. I don't either. We're going to have to do this through Google Translate.
Chung Pao chicken is about as far as I go.
You have plumbed the depths of my knowledge as well.
Yeah.
I can say hello and thank you, and that's about it.
I can say a couple of things.
Shishin. Yeah. That's it. That's the extent of my Chinese, and it's not great. I'm sure my accent's bad. But what's happened in China with cryptocurrency is a really, really, really big deal. It's as big as what they're doing on the debt end. At least two foreign markets. Internally, what they're doing is really good long-term for China. I know I'm not supposed to give compliments to the Chinese government because they go about doing things in ways that I disagree with. But the things that have been performed this month by the Chinese government, both are likely to have long-term good consequences for the Chinese government. Can you have good consequences?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's the consequence of your action, there, China. Man, it's good. So what are the two things I'm talking about? Limitations on debt. This is something any country should have. It's kind of important to have limitations on debt before someone is considered insolvent or some company is considered insolvent. And number two, in essence, making cryptocurrencies illegal in China. Period. That's full stop. Like, you can't own them. You can't sell them. You can't buy with them. You can't sell with them.
You can't create them.
You can't create them. So why is this a big deal? Come on, Jake. Doesn't that just mean there's more for the rest of us? Or, well, no, they can't sell theirs. They're not allowed to sell theirs. And they actually own the majority of the cryptocurrencies on the planet are owned in China. The majority of the cryptocurrencies on the planet were created in China. So what does this do to the cryptocurrency market? We don't know, but it's going to be big. China has been using the cryptocurrency market to buy and sell, to move assets outside of China.
China hasn't been doing that, but Chinese people have been doing it.
Right. So China's been doing it, but China is stopping China from doing it.
The Chinese people.
Wait a minute. This country is called the People's Republic of China, isn't it?
The
people Chinese, of China are doing it, but not the people of China. Gotcha. Go ahead.
Chinese people have been moving money out of China, which the Chinese government doesn't want them to do.
Right. The Chinese people have been doing it, but the people of China say stop it.
And they want to get their money out of China because, very frankly, they don't much like the way the government runs things there. There's a big experiment going on, and the Chinese are running far, far, far more centralized government. As a matter of fact, Chairman Xi has been bringing up Mao a lot. Is it Z or G?
G. It's like a combination between a G sound and a Z.
Okay, G.
Like it's almost SH.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, G.
Chairman Xi. Xi?
Xi.
Has been moving more towards the ideal of a communist dictatorship, which is what technically they are.
Right.
And he is moving away from free market capitalism, which created a lot of wealth and brought China far forward. But it's also made some very, very powerful oligarchs, some powerful billionaires. And China is cracking down on it. So the experiment is continuing. They are doing things one way. We try to minimize regulation, and they're working towards maximizing regulation.
Yeah.
It is going to be an interesting thing for historians to look back on 100 years from now and see these two different systems in competition, which one worked better, ours or theirs.
Hu Jintao was the last head at China and kind of instituted a much more free market. Let's get a lot of wealth built up in China. Let's get educated. Let's get these manufacturing facilities built, and let's get these people trained to use them. Now, Xi has been in charge long enough to start making changes to an existing chairman's plan.
Previous chairman.
Yeah, and this is what we're experiencing right now. We're almost out of time for this hour. We've spent the entire hour on China. There's a lot of other stuff to talk about. The cryptocurrency thing is huge, but we're going to have to wait and see what happens. The debt thing is huge. We're going to have to see what happens. But if you'd like to talk to us off the air as well, we'll be back next hour. But off the air, we have voicemail waiting during the weekend locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach that same line toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 1-800-914-PLAN. There's real live people that answer that during the weekday. It's not a computer. It's crazy. You can go to our webpage. Oh, that's a computer. ThePersonalWealthCoach.com, where you can contact us through the contact form. You can download radio programs from the past. You can go to your favorite podcast provider, or you can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Until next hour, thank you very much for listening. We've enjoyed speaking. We have been in the China shop all hour. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.